So you've presented this argument at Stanford, at the University of Chicago, at Harvard, but you haven't presented it in East Flatbush. That's where I'm from. Brooklyn, New York City. Spread love. It's the Brooklyn way. And what I would tell you, the argument that I would give is, first of all, that you are a proponent, you are basically promoting and supporting and amplifying a exploitative system. So let's start with that premise. All right. What's up? What's up? What's up? It's Trevor FM. I'm back with another episode of Spread Love FM. FM stands for free market, and I'm glad that you are here again today with me. And today's going to be a good show. And why don't we just jump right into it? No need for a long introduction. You know who I am. You know what we are about. So let's start it off. The first thing I'd like to start off with is I want to give a big shout out to the Suncoast paper, it's the local paper here, the Suncoast Times, Hernando Today. And we had an article from one of the writers, Pat Morris, who came to our Sunday market last week and wrote this article. And we knew that she was doing an article, but we had no idea that it would be a front page cover story. My sister, cover girl, right there. You see her there. Our plant expo from a couple of weeks back. We have it happening again tomorrow. So check it out. You can find the link on our website, the press page. And let me show you the article. Maybe I'll read a little bit of what she says. Something I didn't highlight anything. So let me just throw something out there. Yeah, let me see if I can find something really quickly. Here we go, explaining how it works. Under the innovative program, customers can go online and order up to three products that they can pick up at the Sunday market for no charge. The products are donated by local stores, or they are sustainably produced, and/or the company is owned by people who are BIPOC or LGBTQ plus, and thus historically not afforded the same opportunities in the larger economy. And the article pretty much nails it. There are a few things there that may need a little bit more explaining, but this is what we're here for at the Spread Love Free Market Podcast. But yeah, all of this is great. This is, the one of the main challenges that we have is legitimizing. Let me get back on the mic. One of the main issues that we have is legitimizing this platform. People hear free, and there are some connotations that go with that. Most of them, in my mind, at least, are negative, which is the quality of products won't be good, which is also the stigma that you are getting less than. And we want to let people know what's different about this is that no, the quality is just as good. In fact, we are sourcing from the same stores that you would shop for your regular shopping. And the stigma, we are removing that. There is no stigma because there's no difference in your shopping for free versus your shopping for something that's used fiat currency. And there is that one thing that we have to challenge, and it's also mentioned in the article where I was going to read it, but I could just tell you it's our platform. The one thing that's the challenge is that it may not be worth people while to come out. This is a time-based economy after all. And I explained this in a previous podcast that if somebody places a order that's valued by the sticker price of $15, and they have to take an hour out of their time to pick up that item, then that may not be worth it for them. But at the same time, if we give them too much value, we give them, let's say, wild, just a wild on the other end of the spectrum, let's give them $100 in value, Then, excuse me, I'm going to sneeze. Allergies here are crazy. Ooh, man. Yeah, so back to the point. If we give them, for example, $100 in value, then it's a loss for us because we need to balance that with the value that we are giving to the sponsors. So the sponsors have to have a cutoff. Right now, we have that at about $15, $20, where they can sponsor a $20 purchase, and then we can offer our free shoppers more higher priced items at $25, for example, or $30. So that's the balance. That's a model of sustainability. So this is something that we have to kind of play around with and see if we can find the right sweet spot. And which brings us to an announcement that we are excited about right here, which should really kind of close that value issue, kind of negate it a bunch. So right now we are now, as of today, offering free deliveries for Spring Hill, Hernando County, within a 10-mile radius. So now you don't have to think about, is it worth it for me to go out there, spend an hour of my day to pick up 15,000 items? No, we will deliver that to you for free. So all you have to do is go to the website and you will see a pop-up that will actually prompt you. But go to the website, put in the discount code. Are you ready for this one? Defund the 1%. Bam! All right. Defund them, billionaires. Defund them, and this is a practical way of doing it. CPR. We spoke about CPR. We have a compelling reason, a compelling kind of dynamic here, which is that we want to close the wealth gap. That compels people into action. The P, we have a practical way for them to apply that desire, which is the shop. Just go online and shop like you do anywhere else. Everybody knows how to do that. So you don't have to go out of your way. And now we're doing with the deliveries. You don't even have to go and pick it up. You don't even have to go to the groceries. You can just place an order for delivery, put in that discount code, defund the 1%. And then it leads to radical change. The radical change here is the shift in wealth. So if we can just do that, I mean, you would think that you wouldn't have to ask somebody to place a free order to get the same products that they would get, that they would usually shop for and pay for, and having that money go to shareholders at Wall Street, you would think you wouldn't have to sell that. But as I stated in our last episode, this time value, you have to value somebody's time, so it should actually be the same marketing strategy. If it's not, then something is out of whack. So this is our pitch. Go online, place a free order, have a free delivery set, use the discount code defund the 1%, and have that items be delivered to you, where you can now save and at the same time empower your community by defunding the 1%, diverting your dollars to the local economy. Vote with your dollar. Vote with your dollar. So there we go for that. Thanks again to Hernando Today, the Suncoast Times, for that lovely, lovely article. Check it out if you are in Hernando County. You can pick it up at your local, some of your local groceries. Publix, I know, has it. That's where I got our copies. We have a bunch of copies, of course. So yeah, support that. And thanks again, Pat Morris. We hope that you will continue to amplify our message of economic justice. All right, so now I would like to move on to this weekend. Of course, is Father's Day weekend, and I really want to put something together for my dad who has been so supportive, and he has a mutant love gene, as I like to describe it. So much love comes from him. My mom too. We celebrated her on Mother's Day, but today is our tribute to our dad. So Thank you, Dad, for being the best father a son could ask for. I love you, and I am so appreciative of you being my father, being in my life. I love you, love you, love you. All right, so there's that tribute, and I have something else here. I have this other saying here. I was thinking about it this week, and I posted. Let's do our weekly recap of Instagram posts. Let's just jump into it. So I posted this one, stop and smell the family, which is a play on stop and smell the roses, but the same meaning. And yeah, this is kind of like, I guess I was in a place, it was a kind of a week of taking inventory of where I am. It's a struggle being an activist and not having the financial support that you, if I had chosen another path to be a entrepreneur in a more traditional sense, I may have been able to support myself more, but it's rough. I'm not getting the sign. I can't find the same support that I would find if I made other choices, and I couldn't be happier for doing that. But at the same time, it's stressful. Stressful to kind of do without. When you're plugged into the system of capitalism, it makes you feel like you have to always be hustling. And a part of that, and I think let me see if that post is coming up. I shared that post in one of my, here it is. Well, here's one of them. I posted this week, and it says, unless you're living off the land, you're like the rest of us, dependent on capitalism. And it's a damn shame. I'm trying to undo that, but it's very hard. And I really wanted to kind of take a moment to stop and smell the family. Appreciate the moments. There's actually Professor, what's his name? He's on. Okay, here it is. So Scott Galloway had said something about living in the moment, and the podcast is the Professor G Pod with Professor Scott Galloway. And he said something this week that really made me think about what he said. Now I'll paraphrase it, is that his worst fear, one of his worst fears is being an old man and looking back on his life and not being present for his own life, for his own experiences. And that got me thinking, like, yeah, that's such a introspective kind of resonating thing to say, that you're so busy trying to be a entrepreneur or a capitalist, for lack of a better, more less abrasive, less controversial term, and you're there doing this, and even in activism, I'm there fighting, and that's a sacrifice I choose to make. But at the same time, it is a sacrifice nonetheless. So I really wanted to stop and kind of think about, no, I'm here. My family's here in Florida. I have all this love around me. Let me take a moment to kind of appreciate that and try to make that a more integral part of my daily experience. And just shifting from that, not being in the moment to being present, that alone really kind of alleviated some of that stress that I was feeling. And yeah, so I posted that stop and smell the family, inspired, kind of motivated by that podcast from Scott G. And now, yeah, you should check it out. It's a good podcast. He's self-described capitalist, so. But he has such a balanced view of things, so I appreciate that. If I ever met him, we'll have to have a discussion about the greed and the exploitation of the capitalist system. And of course, I have to say it again at least once every episode. I am not a ist or ism. I believe in following the blueprint of Mother Nature and doing what is right, which is something that he seems to adhere to as well. So, for that reason, I am happy to follow. All right, so what else? What else we got? What else do we have? Aha, here we go. Another post I had that I would like to share with you and elaborate on a bit. Competition breeds division, yet it is the chief byproduct of our economy. Allegiance to this tenet not only prevents allyship, but prevents the actions needed to liberate oneself from the soul-crushing trappings of success. Quote unquote, success. Unlearning competitiveness is our biggest challenge. Let us recognize the day after the 4th of July and every day after that as Independence Day, a day to reject competitive economics and instead embrace community and sustainable economies. So here we go. I'm declaring a new day, Independence Day. July 5th just happens to be my birthday, just so you know. And I always was like, man, my birthday falls after the 4th of July. There's got to be something I could do with that. Excuse me. Nobody ever remembers my birthday. So why don't I just trade it in for something that could be useful to the community? Yeah, let's make it Independence Day. I'm learning, unlearning this competitive side of me. Was actually, I remember the first freedom market that we had Fridays in McCarran Park. The first question we asked is, how does capitalism harm you? And my answer was, I'm overly competitive. And I've dialed that down a bunch since in the last 5 or 6, 7 years. And in dialing that down, now the next kind of progression, the next evolution of that is to become more dependent and reliant on our community. And I'll go back to that saying, competition breeds division. It is the chief byproduct of our economy. Allegiance to this tenet not only prevents allyship, but prevents the actions needed to liberate oneself from the soul-crushing trappings of success. And what I mean by that is the actions needed to liberate oneself are actions, for example, to be dependent on your neighbors and not to have that be a stigma. And in my personal example, I'll give you an example. I'm planning to make a trip to New York, and more on that later. I'm planning to make a trip to New York at the end of July, and I was struggling in terms of having enough money to cover my expenses here and to travel, do anything. I need to get a new pair of glasses. I don't buy any new clothes, which is a good thing, actually, to talk about fashion and how unsustainable and environmentally unstable the environmentally unstable effect it has on our planet. So this is why you always see me in very plain clothes. I've been doing that for the last 7 years. But even with that, still having to struggle to make ends meet. And I was hesitant because there's this thing I want to not depend on people. I don't want people to feel a burden to support me. But I had a friend who used her points to purchase my ticket back to New York City. And the pride in me and also not wanting to inconvenience someone else, which I think still falls into the under the umbrella of the pride, really made me hesitant and not ready to embrace the help from friends, from family, from the community. And in many ways, that has been wired into our personality as a communities, a nation, world, capitalism, I guess, in general, that you have to be the rugged individual, that you don't look to others to support you. And we don't realize it. I mean, I'm 50, going to be 53 in July, and I've spent 52 years not making the connection between how harmful this is and the kind of the guidelines and tenets of capitalism, that you have to be competitive, that you have to be the best, that you have to win at the expense of someone else, that you have to support yourself, that you can't rely on community, that they use this world. You can't be a dependent. And I can imagine, I always try to use my imagination to look at an alternative economy, an alternative way of existing, coinciding, and living in harmony with the nature and with your neighbors. And when I thought about that, we're dependent and the stigma that's attached to it, I thought of an alternative world before the Industrial Revolution, before cities and a time, going back to a time when there were villages and neighbors relied on each other, and the neighborhood would raise your kids. It takes a village to raise the child. And were they thinking back then of, were they hesitant back then to reach out to their neighbor when they needed to get a loaf of bread and they didn't have one, even though they may have been one available at the village storehouse, whatever they call it. Store, I don't know if they had stores 500 years ago. Well, the neighborhood flea market. Did they ride into town to get that loaf of bread instead of asking their neighbor for eggs or bread or milk or cheese? And if they did, what would it look like if they didn't? What would it look like if we didn't? What would it look like if we relied on each other to fill in the shortfalls and not to feel a certain way about it? And I thought that if I am trying to build that world and I am not living that world, then how can I testify in, how can I endorse a vision that I don't live and breathe and practice and know the challenges of? And know how to navigate through that stigma. So I said to my friend, I reached out to her, said, "Yes, is that ticket still available?" She said, "Yes." I said, "Book it." And I didn't feel any ways about it. In fact, I felt good because I know that it made her feel good. She had this offer on the table for 2 years. 2 years. Well, a year and a half at least since I left New York. If you ever want to come back, the ticket's there. And I was always like, "Oh, I'm going to save up. I don't want to burden her." But that maybe that's the alienation that Marx is talking about, the disconnection between neighbors. You know, if I don't allow that connection to be made, then I'm not allowing that connection to be made. So I wanted to put that out there. You know, this podcast will go more into all of these aspects of an alternative economy, a way of existing, a way of being. So stay tuned for more on that. I just want to share that posting and what I meant by that right here. Spread love, free market. All right, so what we got next? So actually, this actually still stays on that topic. Those whom society deems failures are often the most liberated amongst us. And it goes back to this idea that the stigma, again, this one less to do with leaning on community and more to do with disengaging from the system. And you see people who are hustling to get the next thing, the next big thing, or the next milestone. And this goes to what Scott Galloway was saying. And you become a prisoner of that. And yet society labels you. Why do they do this? You think about it. Society labels you as the quote unquote success, while it enables the person who is does not have the trappings of quote unquote success as a failure or some a cautionary tale And I just think about the frame that we have allowed to make to validate that story, and what is it supporting, and what has it supported, and why haven't we thought about the harm that it's doing? You know, I've known people who've lived in, you know, remember Saturday, the old Saturday Night Live skit with Chris, what was his name? Chris Elliott? No, wasn't that Chris Elliott? The big guy, man, rest in peace. I can't remember his name, but Chris Norman or something like that. Anyway, he was the guy that did UB. He was a motivational speaker, and he would tell his kids in school, "If you don't get an A plus, you'll be living down in a van by the river." That was his punchline, his theme that he would say to everybody at the end of his motivational speech. Beach. If you don't follow me, you'll be living in a van by the lake. In a van, whatever. You know, you get the point. You know, these are things, you know, that joke, it just taps into the existing narrative that to be free is to be a failure in that way. There's another end of that spectrum, I guess. If you're a billionaire, you have certain freedoms as well, but you also have certain trappings to maintain that. So I've met many people who have been on the negatively narrated. Is that a word, narrated? It's like every week I come up with a new word. Well, it is now, narrated. The negatively narrated narration. So that can't be a word. I just used the word twice. Anyway, there are people who, the people who are living on the road. What was that movie with Frances McDermott? She was living in the van. And these people, they were free. That's probably the ideal example of it in recent pop culture. And let me go look at her Nomadland. What was so let me do that again. What was that movie by Frances McDormand, Nomadland, where they were free? They were living that alternative narrative of not falling for the trappings of success. And that was a movie where she had to fight through that and fight through that stigma. "Yeah, you can stay with me in my house," said her brother, who lived this quote unquote successful lifestyle. "Why don't you stay with us? We have a home. There's a man. You can become a couple. You could have all the things that you don't have now. Just come live with me." And she thought she could do it, but in the end, she needed to be free. And despite her van breaking down and her having to call her, I don't know if it was her brother or her sister, I can't remember that part, for money, and him or her saying, "Come on, you got to do better than that. You got to strive to be something so that you're not living in a van down by the river." So, anyway, I don't want to harp on. I just want to kind of make that point that those whom society deems failures are often the most liberated amongst us. And it's a vision I want to live and that I want to embody. And I do need strength because that stigma is strong. The force is strong with that one, as it was said in a famous movie. I can't remember which movie that was. Yeah, I know which one. Star Wars. All right, let's move on. So we want to get into our podcast reviews, I guess. I still haven't had an official, still don't have an official title for this segment. But let's just call it a review segment, a hot take. I want to play a couple of clips. I want to play a couple of clips from a podcast that I also follow called Capital Isn't. It's by Luigi Zingales and Bethany McLean. I'm probably pronouncing those names wrong. And I had a recent episode that got me a little bit heated. And I guess I want to play a little bit more, and then I'll come back and let you know why it got me heated. If many of you will probably just pick up on it right away based on the clips that I'm playing, but let me just play them for you and then I'll be back.
And the way in which the labor market works these days, such that even people who work full time have to get federal safety net benefits.
Well, the level of income of bottom 20% earners who actually work has risen pretty dramatically in the last 50 years. The value of college education has risen by a very large amount, and the differential between people who have human capital and people who don't have much human capital, it shows up in the marketplace. But the two things that I believe, and the book analyzes and presents statistics on, that we could do to eliminate earned income inequality or to reduce it is a better way of saying. If you had a mandatory work requirement for welfare to keep people in the labor market where opportunity is and where skills are developed, and if you had a more effective education system, especially in the inner cities, that made it possible for more people from poor families to go to college and gave them the tools when they got to college that allowed them to major in the areas where income is highest, that we could reduce earned income inequality. And look, I think we ought to pursue equality of opportunity as a basic right. Obviously, there are limits to what government can do. If my mother loved me and your mother didn't love you, there's no government program that's going to be able to eliminate that. But providing quality education, and we present the hard data about school choice. I'm not sure that school choice in competition is the best way to deal with failing schools, especially in the inner cities. But it performs better than the public education system that we have now. The statistics are overwhelming and irrefutable that that's the case.
So that was from their podcast, Poverty and Inequality in America. And the person speaking there is former Senator Phil Gramm. And he's basically making a point. First of all, I have a lot of issue with what he said. He's basically saying that victim blaming the people who are receiving what was the word that he used? Well, food stamps, government support, transfers, I think was the name. I might be wrong. But who are using transfers to support themselves, that they need to get a job, need to get up off their couch and get to work. This is a cause of our problem. So that was what he was basically saying. It's an old theory of of food stamp mom, welfare moms, etc. But before I get into my issue with that, I would say that he is, I give him credit for taking a different approach. She's basically saying over the overarching argument here, and I did not read his book, but I did hear it on a podcast, and I ask you to give it a listen, and you could form your own conclusion or even read the book even better. But he's saying basically that the wealth gap that we have been that the narrative out there is that the wealth gap has been widening over the past X amount of years. He's basically saying that we are not counting the wealth, net wealth, the revenue that's generated by those who are getting government aid, food stamps, Medicaid, etc. And that's actually a good point. Something that you look at is, oh, that's a really, they're not accounting for that wealth, this support that people are getting. He was saying it accounts for, I think it was like $50,000 in aid to the poor. And I'm not an economist, I'm an economic activist. So I invite folks to come back with numbers that would help this discussion on either side of this debate. Okay, I don't have to buy groceries because I have $300 in grocery support from the government. So am I still considered as poor? So it's a good argument. I get that. So by incentivizing, by asking people to get into the market and work more to fix a system to close a wealth gap, that doesn't work if the system is incentivized to minimize your wages. So yeah, you get a job and you work for $15 an hour instead of when it should actually be $40 or $50 an hour, then you're spinning your wheels. So that's my first issue. But I want to hear another quote, so let's go on.
Look, it's not, I want people to work because I think it's in their interest for them to work. Now, it's in America's interest, obviously, because we have more people pulling the wagon, fewer people riding in the wagon. But I just can't believe that there is not great benefit by getting into the labor market and using your God-given ability. And my own view is that there are a lot of people in this country who have real ability that is never discovered. And let me just say, I failed third, seventh, and ninth grades. Neither of my parents graduated from high school. I have often said to my mother, who's now passed away, that we were lucky that the welfare program didn't exist when I was growing up, because if it had existed, she might have taken it and our lives might have been different. Now, she argued she would never take it. But the truth is, everyone she would know would be taking it. People would look down on her for not taking it. So I want people, I believe there's extraordinary ability in ordinary people. I think in the worst school system in this country, that they're talented people that are never discovered. I didn't learn to read until I was in the 10th grade. When I finally learned to read, I could read pretty good. And my guess is there are a lot of people out there that are like me. So the thing I want you to understand is, I want to reform this system, not because I'm trying to be mean to people, but because I love people. Because I think the current system is keeping people down.
So there we go again, victim blaming. We have the senator saying that his mother, who I'm sure was a great mom, didn't accept welfare. And he's glad that she didn't, because he would not have pulled himself up by his bootstraps. So why don't you get in there, get into the workforce and become a part of the working people of America? And that ignores some very, very fundamental systematic failures, such as, yeah, you could get into the workforce, you could pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but what happens if the wage, the earnings, the revenue that you are generating is now going to the wealthy people and making them richer? And as they try to minimize their costs and maximize their profit and their shareholder value, that in essence is having you work harder for less. And this idea that if you take welfare, which is generated by the people, first of all, for the people. So basically you're working, paying taxes, and that money's coming back to you. So let's put them in a system that benefits the 1%, and in their words, will benefit America. America, this great system that works for everybody. So obviously, I have issue with that. I believe that, A, first of all, to value somebody, to say that somebody does not have the skills that you need to work in a system that works against them, for me, starts on a premise that's flawed. And this is part of what we're doing in terms of valuing people's time and valuing, finding alternative ways to measure value. This is what Spread Love Free Market is about. So I think that's the perspective that's not being discussed here, which I was a little bit surprised, being that the title of the podcast is Capitalism. But I wanted to hear a little bit more before I go on anymore. So here's another soundbite.
Well, first of all, let me say that I never lost a poor boy debate when I was in the Senate. But the plain truth is, I had lots of advantages. My grandmother loved me. My mother loved me. My mother was a hardworking person who worked double shift. And I realized that there are not many people who have mamas like my mama. But it seems to me that the more choices you give to people, the more likely you are for them to find the choice that works for them. I don't know what you can do about the fact that some mothers seem more committed to their children's success than others. I grew up in a generation where most mothers lived their lives through the success of their children. Maybe our generation today is similar. Maybe it's different. I don't know. I'm not part of it. But I can't help but believe that giving people a chance to get out of failing inner city schools will give them at least an opportunity to try to find and develop their God-given ability. But none of that will eliminate the fact that some people have good mamas and some people don't.
So, of course, you can imagine I have a major issue with this. This is, again, victim blaming, and it's really offensive, the terms that were used in terms of categorizing good mothers and bad mothers. That's my first point of contention. The second point of contention is the dog whistle terms, in inner city schools. In the old days, the older generation. I mean, these more or less you translate them into "Make America Great Again." That's a MAGA philosophy, and I want to share this because it needs to be shared. That Phil Gramm, I heard, I learned this at the end of this listening to this podcast. He used to be a Democrat, and he Democrats left him out of a committee, and he then changed over to being a Republican. And now he sounds like a old-fashioned Republican, or they call him a Reagan Democrat. It was a term that they used on the show, and which is actually, it's actually a big relief from what they have now. But it's still the same old, welfare moms argument, trickle-down argument, and he's basically saying, the government can't solve your problems, that we need to have private industry solve your problems. And again, it goes back to the government is the people. That's the people. The government, it goes away from community solving your problem. The benefits, the subsidies, the Medicaid, all of this is community dollars that we pay through taxes that then support us. We support each other. We fill in the shortfalls. He's basically a proponent of privatization and getting people in the workforce. And what that does, as you can imagine, I'm going to say, is that now you're adding value to a system that exploits, that takes the value that you are now learning, the skill that he says you have to go into the market to learn, is exploitative. It has value that goes to shareholders, which their mission is to devalue the worker. Their mission is to cut costs and to increase shareholder value. So if you're a proponent for that, if you're asking to solve a problem, the wealth divide, which is what he says he's supposed to be one of the good guys. If that's what you're trying to do, and you ignoring the fact that the very system that you are being a proponent for, that you are endorsing, that system by its very nature is made to exploit worker value, the value of the people, and to promote shareholder value and the bottom line. So let's hear one more soundbite.
We have had a trade adjustment assistance program since President Kennedy. So there's no doubt about the fact that competition creates winners and losers. But the overwhelming evidence is that America has been a very great beneficiary from trade, that living standards are higher, that wages on average are higher. Not everybody has gained, but the great majority of people have been big gainers.
Have you heard anything in the various critiques of your book or in discussions with people? Have you heard anything that resonated with you, that changed your mind, that made you say, I wish we had taken this into account, we missed this?
Well, let me say, I have presented the book at Stanford, at the University of Chicago, at Harvard, with Larry Summers interviewing me. And I've heard arguments that there are a lot of supplemental measures that if you use them, they partially deal with the problem I'm talking about in terms of undercounting income. But the point is, people don't use them. They use the figures that the Census Bureau puts out as the official number. And I would say this, Bethany, I've been surprised that there haven't been more effective attacks on the book. If I were attacking the book, I would say, okay, what you say is clearly true. I mean, if you can add and subtract, it's clear that if you add up all the transfer payments and you take into account all the taxes, that the numbers are right, but those numbers are misleading in that food stamps aren't really worth what they cost. If you went out and said to people, you're getting $90 worth of food stamps this week, I'll give you $85 for the food stamps, would they take it? Some of them would, yeah. Now, I don't know why people have not made the argument. Maybe if you accept that argument, then you get into a debate that I have had at Chicago and Harvard, and that is, should we be doing all of this differently? Given that we're providing now almost $50,000 for the average household in the bottom 20% of income recipients, should we look at whether we need over 100 federal welfare programs? Should we look at whether providing all these things is as valuable as simply finding a way of giving people the money? Now, I haven't made a decision about that as to where I stand on it, but I think it is certainly a subject worthy of debate. Milton Friedman argued for guaranteed annual income. Now, I can see problems with it, but boy, do I see problems with what we're doing. So that's an area that should be explored. All I'm trying to do, I'm not trying to end the debate. I'm trying to start a debate. We're spending a lot of money. We need to admit it. We need to show the figures, and then we need to debate. Could we do this better?
So you've presented this argument at Stanford, at the University of Chicago, at Harvard, but you haven't presented it in East Flatbush. That's where I'm from. Brooklyn, New York City. Spread love. It's the Brooklyn way. And what I would tell you, the argument that I would give is, first of all, that you are a proponent, you are basically promoting and supporting and amplifying a exploitative system. So let's start with that premise. You are asking workers to, you're basically asking the government not to support the people and let the private industry support the people. And I would say that if private industry, their wonderful track record of paying the workers more and supporting unions, you know, if we allow them to have more control than that they already have, you think that wages will increase? You think that the workers that are being exploited will be less exploited? Now, because it's the only system we have, doesn't mean that it's working. It's just the only system that we have and that we have had for the last 500 years. If you took a wider view, if you zoomed out and you looked at other alternative economies from the past that are stigmatized now. And again, I am not a socialist, a capitalist, or any ist or ism, but I use my common sense. If you look at other systems that identify and point out the flaws in the system, the number one flaw for the very argument that you are making, which is that the wealth gap, it has actually been even, that we need to have more people working and continue the system that we have. If you looked at other systems, like such as the ones that we discussed in our previous podcast, time-based economics, more community-supported economics, having smaller, not having as much growth, that's not lean on competition. They look at the harms, the potential harms of competition. You would see that that may actually be the cause or will lead to bad outcomes for the workers. It will again maximize profits for the shareholders and the company, the corporation. It'll lead to maximizing the costs, maximizing the profits for the employers, and minimizing the pay and the wages for the employees. And that's the outcome. That's the outcome that doesn't seem to be addressed here. So if the premise is faulty, then to argue that there are parts of that faulty premise that are working, and then to point out that the negative, the even more extreme negative outcomes from that faulty premise are what you label as the bad, while you label the main fault as the good, I say that we're starting off on a bad foundation. So that would be my argument if I was to have a discussion. And I appreciate the discussion. The one thing that I give the senator credit for is this idea that, yes, you do need to account for that value that's being sent in the terms of that quote unquote welfare is the word that he used. Yes, yeah, of course, I think you do need to account for that. But I think by accounting for it and saying that you need to minimize it, you're basically being a supporter and amplifying the model of exploitation and the model of profitizing and the model of harmful growth. We didn't even get into the environmental damage that the harmful growth has done. So I think you completely missed the result and the harmful outcomes that come from the system that you say we need to put more energy behind. So that's the argument from East Flatbush. But check it out, Capitalism. The episode is Poverty and Inequality in America. We will have the link in our show notes. And I think this is part one of a two-part series, so we may have more next week, depending on what is said. So I want to go back to one of the quotes that I wrote last, one of the social media quotes that I posted on Instagram, I think kind of ties into this same argument, this debate that the senator had. And I wrote, "The fuel that feeds both the economy of our oppression and our growth is competition. The fuel that feeds both the economy of our liberation and our growth is collaboration." Keep your eyes on the quotes. So in the first statement, we have growth in quotes. The second statement, we don't. And the reason is that the idea that competition is what leads to growth, yeah, and that may I'll agree with that. I'll take that side just for the sake of argument. But my argument is that growth is exactly what is harming us. That we got out of our villages and our communities, and we stopped talking to each other, and we get further and further apart. The fact that our communities, that our people, our neighbors, becoming less connected and pushed further apart, despite the fact that our cities are becoming more and more populated and more dense, is going to lead to bad outcomes. So this idea of competition that he brings up, that it is good, is a faulty premise, in my opinion. Meanwhile, the fuel that feeds both the economy of our liberation and our growth is collaboration. Let's become more neighborly. Let's take off the virtual reality headsets and let's sit in a room and talk to each other. Let's acknowledge each other. Let's ask how we can help each other. Let's borrow milk and bread and egg and cheese like they did in the villages. We don't need the technology that we have. We only need it because we've built a world that says that this technology is what we need to continue to move through this world at a speed that keeps up to pace with the speed of your neighbors. But what we are saying is that look at the alternative. Look at what was there before. Imagine if we had taken a left turn at dawn of the age of industrialization. Imagine where we might have been. We may not have needed a Walmart to be in every town. We would have relied on the community store, the county store, the grocery store. We may not have needed a Macy's to buy our clothing. We would have relied on the community tailor or the seamstress or the person who had a shop or the person that sold secondhand clothing at the thrift store. This is a world that we try to imagine here at Spread Love Free Market, and I implore you to imagine it along with us. So let's move on to our next quote. Defunding the police requires legislative action. Defunding the police requires legislative action and only gets at some symptoms of our oppression. Defunding the 1% requires the people to collectively spend locally and gets to the core of the 400 plus years of systematic race and classism. Defund the 1%. And at the top of the show, I mentioned that we are now working on ways to make your experience with shifting wealth more seamless, more user-friendly. And we launched our free delivery option right here in Spring Hill. Within 10 miles, you can get free delivery of our groceries. So if you need to have groceries, if you know of a person, a neighbor who doesn't know how to drive or who can't drive anymore, or can't get out the house, and she may not even be technologically savvy, you can now place an order for her, or if she is technically savvy, or he is technically savvy, you could direct him to spreadlovefreemarket.com, and they can now place an order, and they can order free groceries. And not only can they get the free groceries, but they can get free delivery with that order. And how does that work? And why am I tying it into the social media post that I just read to you, defund the 1%? Well, the code that you need to place, that you need to put in to get that free order is exactly that. Defund the 1%. Put in that in the discount code field and your delivery will be free along with your order. And that's a world that we're building here. And this is your way to actively participate. CPR, my neighbors. C, have a compelling argument. The argument which is to close the wealth gap. So many people are suffering. How do we close the wealth gap? Well, we give our neighbors a practical way to do this. Not everybody could be out in the street protesting. Not everybody could stop trains, which my neighbors, my fellow activists did in New York City, which was a wonderful thing to see. Big ups to the Queen and big ups to the warriors in the garden and whoever else was out there stopping the trains in the New York City subway. Not everybody could do that. We understand that. But everybody can place an order online and everybody can make a free order. And now you have done your practical work, something that's easy for you to do, something that you are used to doing. The system has trained us well, it's trained us to place an order online. So we are being practical about giving you that same system to empower community and to take your power back from big tech and from the 1%. So that's a P, practical way to compel your action. The R, radical change. Does it lead to radical change? Yes. Shifting wealth away, redirecting wealth away from Wall Street, and to do it in a sustainable way will lead to a radical change. The wealth gap will close, the narratives of harm will stop, and that world that we are trying to imagine here at Spread Love Free Market may start to take form, may start to take shape. So neighbors, get on your phones or your laptops right now, whatever device you are using to listen to this podcast. If you can hear me, get on your devices right now and place a free order. If you're in Spring Hill, Hernando County, within 10 miles, you can get that free delivery as well. And if you are listening to me outside of this area, for my neighbors in New York City, and you just want to support us, and we will be coming to you soon, New York, just so you know, we will be coming to you with a event, and hope to make it a regular event in New York where we first started this, and you will be able to support us there in the way we are supporting each other here in Spring Hill. But in the meantime, if you want to support us, you can also hit our community sponsorship link and sponsor our platform. So that's what we're doing. Free delivery at the Sunday market. We will be out there tomorrow again. We got a bunch of orders. It started off, the week started off slow, but we are closing pretty strongly. More orders this week than last week. More orders last week than the week before. Every week we've been getting more orders. So thank you, neighbors, for doing that. We have the power to enact the change we need to bring that world that we envision here to life. So I also want to share that we have free plants. The Plant Expo is tomorrow. We have free plants available, go online right now. I always forget the names. I'm learning the names of my plants. We have the free Busy Lizzies and the Persian Shields available on our site. We have white and red Busy Lizzies and Patience, I guess they call them, Wallerina. I'm learning all of this. I'm becoming a green. I'm getting my green thumb. We have the free Persian Shields, a.k.a. Destra Balinthus, Auriculata Nis. Yeah, those are some fancy words there. But you can get those for free every week at our Sunday market. And we're also offering, if you want to support us, you can purchase our products at spreadloveindiemarket.com. And we have hydrangeas there available for you to purchase. And that goes to supporting our local businesses. But it also goes to the profits will all go back into buying free groceries for our neighbors. So you could do that right now. Head on over to spreadloveindiemarket.com to support our vendors, and Spread Love Free Market to free order. All right, so that's just about it for the show. But before I go, I want to promote, I want to give a teaser for our episode next week. So I posted online on the social media that I just listened to a 35-minute ode to activism. And I listened to it four times. And it was this track that we will be introducing in our next episode from a couple of activists from my hometown in Brooklyn that we all met the same summer of activism. And it seems like this, we were reaching this three-year point where people are kind of, things, ideas are crystallizing and taking shape and forming. It's happening here at Spread Love Free Market. Our model is becoming clearer and clearer, and we've been able to apply and execute as opposed to iterate. And the same thing happened with the folks that I have coming in next week. And I'm excited for you to hear what I listen to, a 35-minute ode to activism. It's a manifesto of sorts. And I can't wait for you to hear it. So join us next week. In the meantime, follow us, spread the word, spread love. Tell your neighbors to order. The more orders that we get, the more empowered our community becomes, the more support we can give to Main Street, and the less power we give to Wall Street. So thank you all for listening. Until next time, this is Trev FM. And thank you, thank you, thank you. Spread the love, spread the message, and I will see you next week.